I'm delighted to be here, and I have to say I feel that I can be particularly pleased to be here. I'm sure I'm going to win a lot of votes, particularly if I'm the only person who is prepared to debate myself on health policy. You were actually going to hear quite a lot from me about how out of touch this government has got, but it seems that failing to turn up as a minister to the National Press Club debate with so many stakeholders that I've seen here in the audience, a national audience watching us on TV, that perhaps I don't need to explain to you why this government is so out of touch. I do really feel that it is quite discourteous, and I'm sorry more for you than for me that Minister Abbott is not here and did not give it the priority that it deserves. Let me tell you a few things about the health policy strategy that Labor has for this election. Kevin Rudd said from day one that this election was going to be about the future, and nowhere is this more true or more important than in health. The future challenges that are facing our health system are significant. We have a growing burden of chronic disease. We have an ageing population. We know that there are increasing costs of new technologies, and there is waste and inefficiency generated by the buck-passing and blame-shifting that characterises Commonwealth-state relations. Honestly, if the Commonwealth-state health relationship were a marriage, the partners would be in counselling, the states would be seeking maintenance payments in the courts, and the parties would both have a strong case for divorce on the grounds of mental cruelty. Fixing this unhappy marriage, we know, is going to be hard. It will be difficult. The divisions are so entrenched that many people, including the Health Minister, has given up on fixing them. Labor has been bold enough and determined enough to put its hand up and say that we want to fix these things and we will take on the future challenges. It might be tough, but the price of doing nothing is just too high. Imagine today's generation of children having a worse life expectancy than any of us today. Wouldn't that be a shameful generational legacy for us to leave for our children? Labor's determination to focus on the health outcomes of the next generation and the changing community needs have shaped the breadth of our health agenda. We've announced a $2.5 billion National Health and Hospitals Reform Plan. It's a national coordinated plan to improve health and hospitals across the country. We're particularly going to focus on modernising and investing in the infrastructure that's needed for the coming challenges. We want to keep people well and out of hospital. We want to find appropriate care for the elderly. Our plan isn't just for one hospital in one marginal seat. Our plan is for the whole health and hospital system across the country. We know we must invest in fundamental reform. We need to focus more on prevention to keep people well for their benefit, but also to take pressure off our hospitals. This is about shifting the debate in healthcare, and it's about planning for the next decades. Under Labor's policy, it's all about us taking responsibility to fix these problems. We have a determination to make sure that we do. We want to end the blame game. The buck will stop with Kevin Rudd because Australians are frankly sick to death of all the finger-pointing and excuses. We will invest heavily in what is needed to drive the reforms. We will work with the states, but if the states don't want to play ball with us, we're also prepared to take action to take on financial control of the hospitals, excuse me, if that's what the public endorses. We've announced a number of specific strategies that go to these things. A $600 million elective surgery plan to slash waiting lists around the country. A plan to get 9,000 more nurses in our hospital. A fund to pay for 1 million dental consultations and treatments across the country. And $220 million to be invested in GP super clinics across the nation. We've also announced policies on kids' health, aged care, rural health, a cancer plan, and postnatal depression, just to mention some of them. But all of these commitments share common themes. They're about intervening early and preventing, where possible, illnesses that beset us. Look at our postnatal depression screening strategy. Look at our kids' health strategy. We want to take pressure off bottlenecks in the system. Look at our proposals in aged care, our elective surgery plan, our dental plan. And we want to use Commonwealth investments to drive change and enhance equity across the country, our nurses' policy and our super clinics in particular. Later today, Kevin Rudd and I will be announcing a new accountability measure to ensure that our $600 million elective surgery plan will reduce elective surgery waiting times state by state and hospital by hospital. This will include a national public hospital report card system. The key difference between us and the government in health is that they fear planning and investing for this sort of long-term change. Mr Abbott has been explicitly anti-reform. He's tried to paint any change that's mentioned as a radical option, no matter how widely people, even in this room, agree that change is needed. Accordingly, after 11 years, there's been a worrying stagnation by the government. They admit that they've failed to properly plan for their current workforce needs. They admit that they have underinvested in our public hospitals. Technology, clinical practice, improved screening and intervention has all gone ahead in leaps and bounds, but the government hasn't. In the last 11 years, the government hasn't taken stock, planned for new challenges, or invested in the long-term future. In fact, when they have bothered to call for reviews or undertaken them, they then refuse to release or act on the results. It's no wonder that Minister Abbott dislikes committees so much. Why waste everybody's time if you're just going to ignore their recommendations? Just look at the two reviews into the Medicare benefits schedule that have been shelved, or the workforce advice on nurses, which was comprehensively ignored. This reform aversion has meant that the ministerial reign of Minister Abbott has been marked by bequests from on high to fix piece by piece any political problem as it arises. His focus has been to fix a political problem, not the patient's problem. The government's strategy on health has not been to benefit the public's health, but the health of their own political fortunes. That's why bulk billing rates are only now climbing back up to the high rates that existed under Labor. That's why the blame game continues. That's why we have 2,300 elderly patients stuck in hospitals every night because of a lack of aged care facilities. And that's why we have 650,000 people across the country on dental waiting lists as well, who incidentally, Minister Abbott says, are party stooges. It does actually make me wonder, and perhaps I should add today to the list as well, who on earth is Minister Abbott going to insult next? There's 650,000 people on public dental waiting lists around the country, and Mr Abbott goes on radio to accuse them. Apparently everyone with a toothache is a Labor Party hack. Yesterday, the Minister attacked Bernie Banton, a decent man who has been campaigning for the support and benefits of mesothelioma sufferers. I do hear that the Minister was forced to make an apology today, but I think the damage has been done. This is bad politics and bad judgment. It shows a minister who is out of control and out of touch. But the biggest strain, the biggest burden that Minister Abbott has to wear is the Howard government's approach to our hospitals. Under their watch, the Commonwealth contribution to funding public hospitals has dropped to 41% after $1 billion was ripped out of the system during the last healthcare negotiations. And after 11 years, all that the government now has to offer is a takeover plan in one hospital and a plan to add local hospital boards to the current administration of our hospitals. This board's plan will not fund a single extra nurse, doctor, or dollar extra resources into the system. It will only add another 7,500 bureaucrats to a system which is already under strain. And I've heard Mr Abbott say many times that bureaucrats are the problem. If bureaucrats are the problem, how on earth can another 7,500 of them be the answer? We know that this National Board's plan, if you can call it that, has now also apparently not going to apply to small hospitals. We know that it creates a risk that work choices will eat even further into the pay and conditions of our nurses around the country. And then today we see we have a last-minute workforce announcement, so last-minute that Mr Abbott has not been able to be with us today to talk about it. It's true that Minister Abbott is a political fixer. I'm quite happy to give credit where credit is due. And it's no doubt a valuable role to play in a political party. But in the crucial health portfolio, after a decade without rudder or direction, this is not enough. Fresh thinking is required. The blame game has to stop. Federal Labor will take the long view and the broad view and work to tackle the challenges that face us, both now and into the future. Under the Federal Labor government, the buck will stop with Kevin Rudd. Under the Howard government, the buck simply gets moved from desk to desk. In fact, I think the main part of the Health Minister's job is simply to make sure it doesn't end up on Mr Howard's desk. Our doctors and nurses expect better than this, our hospitals need better than this, and our kids and ageing parents deserve better than this. And that's what Labor's health plan will give them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nicola Roxon. We'll begin our question period. I hope all these people weren't saving up questions specifically for Tony Abbott, but we'll try and see how it goes. The first one today is from Danielle Cronin.
Danielle Cronin from the Canberra Times. I was going to ask a question of both speakers, but you can't always get what you want. I was going to ask about the Health and Hospitals Plan. During the campaign, I think it's about $400 million has already been committed, and we're still sort of three and a bit weeks out. If elected, is Labor running the risk of having too little left in the kitty to tackle problems in the public hospitals or to pay bonuses to the states for improving patient care?
Thanks very much. Look, Labor's $2.5 billion health and hospital reform plan is a down payment for the future. It's about us making investments in changes that we know will drive the reforms that are needed in the system. Of course, some of that money is going to be committed. As you've seen, an amount has already been committed. But we will make sure that there will be more invested in the health system. We're going to face the healthcare negotiations very soon. Obviously, whichever government is elected, that will be a top priority. But the difference between us and the government is we've been prepared to put that money on the table. We've been prepared to say that we will use it to drive change. And we think that that's actually going to be a key factor in being able to shape and bring about and deliver some of the reforms that are needed.
Next question is from Mark Metherill.
Mark Metherill from the Sydney Morning Herald, Ms Roxon. I was going to put this question to Tony Abbott, and perhaps we'll get a chance there.
I could do an impersonation if it helps. My office tells me it's quite good.
We've seen under the coalition initiatives, particularly the health insurance rebate and more recently the Medicare safety net, which have the result of tending to favour those on higher incomes in terms of people who can afford health insurance getting the 30% rebate, people living in areas well served by doctors, which tend to be better off areas, being more likely to benefit from the safety net. Do you think that the egalitarian nature of Medicare has been diluted under the coalition, and if so, what would you do about it?
Thank you. Look, it's a good question that involves something that it's very important for me to put on the record as well. I actually believe that we have a strength in our health system in Australia, that we have both a strong public and private sector. What we need to do, though, is make sure that that balance is right, that we don't have an extraordinarily successful public sector and a private health sector that is not sustainable, or we don't have an incredibly profitable private health sector and a public sector that's under strain. So we're quite happy to support the changes that the government has made in terms of investing in the private sector. We just don't believe that they have adequately paid attention to also investing in the public sector. Medicare, I think, has been neglected by this government. Really, they've had such a love-hate relationship with it. They pulled so much money out and bulk billing rates dropped, and then they've tossed a whole lot of extra money in, and they're finally coming back up to where they were. But they haven't adjusted the schedule in a way that's comprehensive and planning for the future. It's now the size, and many GPs here know this much better than me, it's now the size of a telephone book. We really need to invest in making that schedule appropriate in the future so doctors are encouraged and able to do the work that they need to. We've committed to reviewing this so that the incentives, if you like, for 6-minute medicine are removed, and we understand that we'll need to invest heavily in those plans for the future. I have somebody holding up their fingers behind me, and I'm not sure if that's to me or may mean that the minister is about to appear and be able to do his impersonation of me instead. But I think it is really important to get the balance right. I think Medicare has suffered under the government. I think the reason that Minister Abbott constantly says he's the best friend that Medicare ever has is that he hopes that by saying it so much, people will believe him. I don't actually think when you look at their record that stands up, and we will make sure that we continue to make Medicare universally available, and our superclinic strategy is about getting Medicare available and accessible to people in communities that are currently underserviced.
Thank you. Next question is from Laura Tingle.
Laura Tingle from the Financial Review. Ms. Roxon, you mentioned the healthcare agreements before, and I'd just like to ask you to go through how the healthcare agreement negotiations would be negotiated, given what you and Kevin Rudd have said about how you're going to proceed, i.e. that you're going to look for a cooperative approach, but then wake the states if they don't behave. How do you write that into the healthcare agreements, and would you anticipate any particular conditions being put on the agreements of the sort that we've seen from the coalition, probably not about industrial relations, but conditions that anticipate the need for the federal government to change the basis on which hospitals are managed?
Thank you. Look, the healthcare agreements need to be negotiated and signed on by the middle of next year. And given that we have given ourselves a very ambitious timetable of setting up a health reform commission and dealing with a range of other problems across the entire health system, not just our hospital system, we've committed to that commission helping identify some of the targets that will need to be set in our healthcare agreements. That work will take longer, no doubt, than the time frame of the healthcare agreement. And what we've said is that early work of the commission will inform the conditions that we want to put in the healthcare agreements. Of course, if we're elected and I'm the health minister, I imagine by the 25th or 26th of November, some of the first people that we'll need to be on the phone to are the state health ministers to get negotiations started. Those negotiations should already have been commenced, and a government that was serious about investing in public hospitals and a health system would have been involved in those discussions already. In fact, Minister Abbott walked away, threw his hands in the air many months ago and said, I'm just not going to do this now, I'm focused on the election and I'm not going to worry about it. These agreements are too important to be affected by the political cycle in this way. So we will make sure that early down payments, I'm sure there will be benchmarks and conditions, will be put into the agreement, and we will have a mechanism so that 18 months in, the time that we have set to say if we don't see the states performing and committing to the reform that we believe is necessary to deliver the best health services to the community, that we will then seek approval from the public to take over financial control. So the timeframes are tight. We've got a very ambitious job in front of us, but we don't want these negotiations to be able to just drag on forever. And we've really made quite clear that we're prepared to drive them, even though it's going to make the next health minister's job a very hard one.
Next question is from Jane Bunce.
Jane Bunce from AAP. Of the two parties, Labor is the one putting the most focus on dental care, but you've so far promised less money than the government. What more can voters expect to see?
Well, you won't be surprised I'm not going to announce all our policies here today. We have announced our first instalment, but I would like to take the time to explain why we've taken a different approach than the government, because it's not just about money. Pouring millions and millions of extra dollars into a completely disastrous scheme, which is what the Commonwealth has done, they have a scheme that has not serviced a single person in the Northern Territory under the age of 25. Now, if a scheme that is supposed to help people with chronic dental problems doesn't seem to have a single client in the Northern Territory, then something is wrong with the design of the program. And if you just commit, as the government has, several hundred million dollars to that when you know it can't be spent, that will not help people across the country. So we've said, rather than spend the money on that, we will, as our initial instalment in dental care, fund a million extra consultations and treatments across the country. We want that to be used to clear the public dental waiting lists, because we don't actually think we can deal with the long term problems in dental care unless we ensure those people get some attention first. I think the only reason the government won't do that is their absolute determination not to work with the states. They don't accept that in many communities public dental services are the only dental services that are around, and if you don't use that infrastructure, you just ensure that a whole group of people in the community continue to be neglected.
Just before this broadcast began, we had some ceremonies here to award the Excellence in Health Journalism Awards this year, and I was hoping to reserve this until the Minister arrived, but perhaps this is the moment. The winner of this year's award, there are several categories, and an overall winner, that winner this year being Roy Eccleston, who's down here on our press table. Congratulations, Roy. And we have... We also have here last year's winner, Jill Margo, and the previous year's winner, Hedley Thomas, who is the next questioner.
That was the longest introduction I've ever heard, Hedley. He's really worried about all the questions you're going to ask me.
Hedley Thomas from The Australian, thanks. Ms. Roxon, in Queensland over a number of years, we had a very strong political focus from the former Beattie government on elective surgery and waiting lists and promises to cut the lists. And this put an enormous amount of pressure on the administrators of public hospitals. It led to short cuts. It ultimately produced the disaster that we saw at Bundaberg Base Hospital. You've announced similar cuts to waiting lists and targets and so on. How will you ensure that patient care is delivered safely so that the patients don't become part of a sausage machine where the targets are all important?
Thank you. Look, it's an important question because what we need in our health system is to be able to do more than one thing at once. Of course we want to invest to be able to clear some of the elective surgery waiting lists around the country, but we are also talking about investing in infrastructure that hospitals need. We're talking about providing thousands of extra nurses and paying them significant incentives to work in our hospitals. We're talking about rethinking the way the funding arrangement between the Commonwealth and the state works. Actually, if we do all those things together, and provided we have the Commonwealth prepared to share in that investment that's needed to make it happen, I'm not worried about elective surgery dominating the scene in the way that you paint in the question that you're asking. But we do need to make sure we are setting some targets, and it is an example of an area where we will. And you will see the investments that we're making elsewhere, particularly in the sorts of services that help keep people out of hospital and keep pressure off our emergency departments. We know that that can have a really long-term impact as well. So the basic answer is we've got to do more than one thing at once. I think that's the guarantee, that we make sure we put enough resources and enough staff into the system, but we do it all as a part of a comprehensive reform package that redesigns the system for the future.
Question from Sue Dunleavy.
Sue Dunleavy, Daily Telegraph. Ms. Roxon, Labor has made much of ending the blame game in over health during this election campaign. The state government in New South Wales has presided over a massive slide in standards in our state's public hospitals. Why should voters in New South Wales trust another Labor government at another level to do better in health, particularly as you've been complaining that $1 billion has been ripped out of public hospitals, but you're only offering to put back in $600 million? And if the buck does stop with Kevin Rudd, could you explain how he would handle a situation where a woman was forced to give birth in the toilet of a public hospital, or miscarry in the toilet of a public hospital?
Thank you. Well, one of the clearest reasons that you know there would be a difference if Kevin Rudd is elected is that we have said our $2.5 billion plan, it's not right that it's only $600 million that's going into hospitals, and it's not right that that will be all the resources. That is a significant down payment and a strategy that we are going to apply across the country. Now, your paper covers the problems in New South Wales, where there have been some dramatic examples in recent time in the media. But the truth is, the public hospitals around the entire country are under pressure. And they are under pressure for a range of reasons, which include the Commonwealth failing to be an active participant in the way services are funded and delivered across the country. Now, everything may not work when we have a Commonwealth Labor government prepared to invest and drive reforms, but we will make sure that we give the states sufficient resources, that we set tight benchmarks and timeframes. If it doesn't work, we are prepared to say that we will take on financial control of the hospitals. That's we think the right thing to do is say to the community, will your services be better if you actually have a Commonwealth government working and committing resources together in partnership with the states? Let's act, call me old-fashioned, but let's actually see if that can work first. Perhaps going back to the analogy I used earlier, let's actually try to see if the counselling will work. Let's try to see if spending a little bit more time together actually delivers some change. And if that doesn't work, then we will take over financial control of the hospitals. But I'm very confident that after 11 years of having none of that cooperation, we will see quite a different outcome in our hospitals across the country. But we need more nurses, we need proper workforce planning, we need our hospitals to be well resourced, and we need better accountability from the hospitals themselves.
Thank you very much. Well, as you will have seen, the Minister for Health, Tony Abbott, has just arrived, and I'd invite him now to make his opening statement of 8 minutes. Please welcome Tony Abbott.
First of all, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being so patient. I didn't wish to make such a grand entrance. I really do apologise for it, but even in election campaigns, sometimes things go awry. Ladies and gentlemen, health may not always be the most important issue to journalists, but it is amongst the most important issue to people and to voters in this election campaign. It has been an honour to be Health Minister these last 4 years and to work with Australia's extraordinarily committed doctors, nurses and other health professionals to keep our health system amongst the best in the world. The government has strengthened Medicare. We have brought the GP bulk billing rate to 78%. We have got the overall bulk billing rate to record highs. As well, we have helped to change the health culture to one which promotes wellness rather than simply treats sickness. The government has reformed the pharmaceutical benefits scheme in ways which still give Australians timely access to life-saving and life-enhancing drugs, but at a fair price to taxpayers. And the government has invested massively in our aged care system to ensure that frail Australians have the best possible care in their final years. But I don't want to talk about the government's record today. I want to talk about the future. The key challenge for our health systems is public hospitals. In the last decade, they have become the problem part of our health system because of mismanagement by the state Labor governments. Now, public hospitals need more money, they need better management, and they need less pressure on them. And the Coalition has a plan which will address each of these three aspects. We will provide more money over and above indexation for public hospitals, but we will expect more from the states in return for this increased funding. First, we will expect the states to publish very detailed data on public hospital performance, individual public hospital performance, including infection rates and readmission rates, as well as data on precisely what services individual public hospitals are delivering. Second, and most important, we will require the states to create specific public hospital boards because hospital management should be accountable to local people and not just distant bureaucrats. Now, I have to say that there is no perfect way to run public hospitals, but the kind of clandestine budget cutting which we have seen at Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney and the kind of go away and don't bother us treatment of local clinicians that we saw in Bundaberg Hospital and in Queensland would be much harder under a system of local hospital boards. The government has also got to help take the pressure off public hospitals by keeping out of hospitals those who don't need to be there in the first place, and by getting out of hospitals quickly those who no longer need acute hospital care. Now, as well as restoring bulk billing rates, the government has funded 140 after-hours clinics, including some at public hospitals, so that people do not need to go to emergency departments to quite the same extent. As well, the government has funded some 2,000 transition care places for people too sick to go home but who no longer need acute care, and the government will be making further announcements in these areas in the course of the campaign. Now, I have to say that only the Howard government has a credible plan for better public hospitals, because we don't have Labor's addiction to bureaucracy, and we are prepared to stand up for patients even if that means taking on state Labor governments. Now, I'm as keen to end the blame game as anyone, but you don't end the blame game by blaming everything on the Howard government, and you don't help patients by protecting and defending incompetent state Labor governments. Now, the point I make is, why would you trust federal Labor to fix public hospitals when state Labor has created the problem in the first place? And if you want to know how federal Labor would run Medicare, have a look at how state Labor runs public hospitals. If you want to know how a Prime Minister Rudd might handle health, have a look at how Director General Rudd handled health in Queensland when he closed 2,200 public hospital beds and failed to fluoridate the Queensland water supply. Now, I am pleased that the Labor Party says that they support the private health insurance rebate, even though it was almost the first thing Kevin Rudd voted against when he entered Parliament in 1998. I'm pleased that Labor says it supports the Medicare safety net, even though Julia Gillard spent 3 years calling it a sham. But if you don't have the values to support those policies, you can't be trusted to keep those policies in government. I have to say that I am tremendously looking forward to being Health Minister after the election. I very much hope I will be the Health Minister after the election. The biggest single challenge for policymakers is to renegotiate the healthcare agreement, and I am looking forward to doing that in ways which help patients and which don't turn out to be just a sweetheart deal for state Labor governments.
Thank you. Let's go back to our questions. I think we got to Annabel Stafford.
Annabel Stafford from The Age. I had a question for Ms. Roxon. You've spoken about wanting to ban the use of licensed characters like Shrek in advertising of junk food, but there have been recent reports that Labor will no longer do this and has also backed away from a policy to ban junk food advertising. Have you been overruled on this? And given that we've seen the overruling of Robert McClellan on the death penalty, Peter Garrett on climate change, what input do Labor's front bench have into policy making?
Thank you. Look, Kevin Rudd and I are really committed to making sure that we do tackle childhood obesity, but actually the nation's obesity crisis, in a serious and comprehensive way. And I have on a number of occasions said that I was really interested in the techniques that marketers are starting to use to particularly target children. And as the mother of a 2.5-year-old, I think I would not be alone in this country as seeing the effect that it can have on our children. But we have made clear that we would like to wait and see what the ACMA review comes up with and recommends in terms of advertising on TV. We know that this is a problem that extends beyond television to new formats like the internet, to SMS campaigning. I saw a recent report about those teen magazines now actually including more advertising for junk food than anywhere else. So I think we have to look at this in a responsible and careful way. Kevin's made absolutely clear that we will look at the recommendations of the ACMA review. I don't believe that that will be completed before the election, and I am very concerned that we keep a good watching brief on this. But in the meantime, we've announced a range of other policies like our Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden project, teaching kids about how food is grown and prepared, having them be interested in it, not lectured about what's good and bad for them. We've supported community initiatives through funding research that will bring together the recommendations. And I am very confident that I will continue to have a close working relationship with all our team on these issues, as I'm sure those other shadow ministers have with Kevin as well.
If you recall the general conditions, you've got a minute to respond.
Well, look, I think Nicola plainly has been overruled by Kevin Rudd on this issue. Nicola was running around the countryside telling everyone that junk food ads would be banned, that Shrek wouldn't be allowed to promote food, and then her leader came up and very strongly slapped her down. So I think we just have to face facts that Nicola has been overruled on this. Look, in the end, the only people who are responsible for what goes into people's mouths are parents, in the case of kids, and ourselves, in the case of adults. It's important that we be better informed, that we be encouraged, and in some cases helped to make better choices. The government's got a range of policies in place to do that. I'm particularly encouraged that we are seeing information on the energy content of food move from the fine print at the back of the pack to big print at the front of the pack so people can make intelligent decisions. But in the end, this is an issue for us. It's not just an issue for government.
Question from Rhianna King.
Rhianna King from the West Australian. My question's for the Minister. When the government announced its local takeover, it was said that all of the nation's 750 hospitals would be run by locally managed boards. Recently, you've changed your wording slightly to substantial or decent-sized hospitals. Can you tell us, if re-elected, how many hospitals would be run by local boards? Would they all have CEOs? And what would happen to those hospitals, the smaller-sized hospitals?
Well, every hospital needs to have someone in charge. The buck has to stop with someone, and it certainly ain't going to stop with Kevin Rudd. I mean, the idea that the Prime Minister could personally run the public hospital system is bizarre, and only in a slightly surreal political contest could Kevin Rudd have got away with making this bizarre claim. But someone does have to be in charge. That's absolutely essential. And that person should be responsible to and accountable to local people. Now, I think every public hospital should have boards. I don't say that public hospitals would work perfectly if they had boards, but I tell you what, they'd work a lot better if they had boards, particularly if they had boards with doctors and nurses and former patients on them. The government will be announcing a major public hospital policy in the next week or so. The details will be revealed then, but I certainly think that every hospital should have a board, and you'll see what the government's precise policy is in just a week or so.
Well, I think the Minister has shown that he really hasn't got a clear plan at all for what these local boards will deliver for public hospitals. In fact, we spent quite a bit of the time on the phone yesterday dealing with the problems that the Minister has created in the takeover with the Mersey Hospital. I'm sure the Minister didn't particularly want to talk with me, but the caretaker conventions require that he does, although he doesn't need my agreement. But what is completely clear, for example, with the only hospital where the government has already introduced introduced this plan is that the government has been falling over backwards to find a way to meet and keep the promise that AWAs will not apply for nursing and medical staff at the Mersey Hospital. Now, they've made this particular commitment because of a promise that was made to the community in Northern Tasmania. They won't make that promise to everyone else, and they should, or our nurses are going to be under attack because of this system.
Next question is from Clinton Porteous.
Clinton Porteous from the Courier Mail newspaper. Mr. Abbott, this has been a bizarre day. You've turned up more than 30 minutes to a live debate. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, why did you leave your travel arrangements so fine? And why didn't you have a replacement here like Christopher Pyne or Brett Mason? In the end, haven't you made a big blunder in the election campaign?
Well, I'm perfectly happy to apologise. The viewing audience will make their judgments, obviously, but I had to be at a campaign launch this morning and it was impossible, given the speed of planes and so on, to be here any quicker. But I did my best and people will have to make their judgments.
I mean, this is mea culpa month, I think, for Tony Abbott. I'm sorry we didn't invest in the public hospitals. I'm sorry we didn't plan for the workforce. I'm sorry I offended Bernie Banton, and now I'm sorry I offend a whole national TV audience. I mean, really, at some point, this government is so out of touch and so arrogant that they won't even plan their own policy announcements to be able to allow the minister to meet his commitments. I actually think it is totally discourteous and a reflection of the government being completely out of touch.
Next question is from Michelle Grattan.
To Mr. Abbott. Mr. Abbott, we know that you're a strong supporter of a federal takeover of the public hospital system some years ago. We know you were overridden by the Prime Minister and your other colleagues, but you now tell us not only that you're overridden, but that you no longer believe that that is a desirable system. Could you take us through your thought processes as to how you got from that position to your current position?
Well, Michelle, my view always was that the best way to help public hospitals was to have them locally managed by local people wherever possible, certainly by local executives accountable to local people, local doctors, local nurses, local health staff. That was always what I wanted. Now, there is a better way to do this than to have a full federal takeover. We can do it through the healthcare agreements by making it a condition of increased funding under the healthcare agreements that the states set up the boards. So what we are doing is moving towards a system of local hospital boards, which was what I always wanted to bring about. We're just doing it by different means. As I've said before, let me say it again, Michelle. Kevin Rudd thinks that the ultimate solution to public hospital problems is a Canberra takeover. John Howard and Tony Abbott think that the best answer to public hospital problems is a local takeover, and that's what we're going to achieve with these boards.
Well, I presume that that means that Mr. Abbott is just going to hand over a bucket of money to the Victorians who already have local boards running their hospitals. But in other states where they don't, I presume that this still means that rather than trying to fix or change any of the duplication or mixed responsibilities, that we're just going to have another level of reporting and another level of responsibilities to add into that complex mix. I can't for the life of me see how that delivers anything for the community, and I think Mr. Abbott still has a fair bit of explaining to do about how this plan will work.
Next question's back to Mark Metherill.
Mark Metherill from the Sydney Morning Herald. Mr. Abbott, this morning the Prime Minister said how proud we could all be of the egalitarian nature of Medicare. But how can he say that, given if we take the recent example of the figures showing that the Commonwealth's contribution to public hospital funding had gone down so significantly, when you explained, well, no, that was all right because, in fact, the money was going to private hospitals, largely accessible, of course, to people with health insurance who benefit from the 30% Commonwealth rebate. We have people largely in better off areas where lots of doctors
being able to much more frequently access the safety net measure, which was meant to help so-called struggling families. Do you not acknowledge that the egalitarian nature of Medicare under the coalition government has in fact been diminished?
Not at all, Mark. I certainly don't for a second accept that. And I accept that not everyone can always be bulk billed for everything. I accept that. That's why it's important that we have the safety net. And I'm pleased that Labor has belatedly accepted what they for many years described as a sham. So I accept that it's good that they are doing that, although I don't altogether trust the sincerity of their last-minute conversion on this topic. Look, on the subject of the healthcare agreements, we have entirely honoured our commitments. We have entirely honoured our commitments. And if the states didn't like the deal, they shouldn't have signed up to the deal. Now, our funding under the healthcare agreements, which goes to states, not directly to hospitals, has certainly grown strongly at the rate of over 5% a year, but it hasn't grown as strongly as the state's own spending on hospitals. And I'm pleased that the states have increased their spending on hospitals because they needed to increase their spending on hospitals. And what the states are doing at the moment is playing catch-up for the many years in which they underinvested in this area.
Well, unfortunately, I think Mr Abbott has just made clear that if the Howard government is re-elected, they will take the same approach to the healthcare agreement negotiations that they did last time, which was wait until the absolute 11th hour, put an offer on the table and say take it or leave it. There was no negotiation or discussions around reform. There was no talk about how you can invest in changes that keep people out of hospital, they wouldn't deal with aged care, all the things that we've said we want to put on the table so that we have a more comprehensive agreement, not just an agreement that deals with hospitals. And I fear what Mr Abbott has made clear is, again, he will say take it or leave it, and there will be no partnership to deliver on the reforms that are needed in our system.
We have one more question from Laura Tingle and then move to the closing statements. Laura.
This is a question to Mr Abbott. It goes to the question of the healthcare agreements. You've talked about what you'll do to get the community boards, that you'll put conditions on the agreements. I'm just trying to clarify, are you going to just hand over the money to the states nonetheless? Are you going to do what you've done with the Mersey Hospital? Are you going to cherry-pick hospitals in marginal electorates? Are you anticipating other conditions on the grants other than the imposition of boards? And in particular, are you considering conditions which we've seen in some other Commonwealth grants in other areas relating to industrial relations conditions?
Look, I want to make it absolutely crystal clear that in respect of hospitals, we are on about the delivery of the best possible healthcare. We're not on about pushing the frontier of workplace relations change. And this is an absolute furphy, this claim from Nicola, echoing the claim of Lara Giddings earlier in the week that the government is hell-bent on putting people on AWAs. It's just a scare tactic from the ALP. Now, it will all be revealed when our public hospital policy is announced in a week or so. We want every public hospital to have boards, but public hospitals will still be run by the state governments. Funding will be provided to the state governments. It will then be up to the state governments to determine how much money any particular hospital will be getting from government sources. But the actual management of that hospital's budget within the policy to be set by the state government should be the responsibility of the local CEO and the local board.
Well, I'm not sure how Tony can say that honestly to this audience after having spent the entire day yesterday making sure that the Prime Minister issued their first ever public service determination to ensure that the nurses and doctors at the Mersey Hospital would be continuing on the conditions that they currently are on and not put on AWAs. If it was necessary for him to go down this path for the one example of where they have implemented their policy, why is it an unreasonable issue for nurses across the country to be concerned about? They didn't tell us last time about their work choices plan, and they're not telling us about the detail this time either.
Thank you both. The closing statements are in the reverse order of the opening statements, so that means it's you again, Tony Abbott.
Well, thanks very much indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, judge this government by its record and by its promises. Judge the sincerity of our promises by the effectiveness of our record. Now, over the last 11 years, we have been a very good manager of Medicare and the other health systems for which the federal government is responsible. We have increased funding very substantially, and we have improved the effectiveness of these programs. Medicare is a better program now than it was 11 years ago. The PBS is a better program now than it was 11 years ago. Aged care works better for the people there than it did 11 years ago. So we don't just talk about health. We don't just profess our good intentions in health. We deliver. So judge what we say the future will hold based on what we have delivered in the past. Now, I bleed, frankly, when I see the state of so many of our public hospitals. I feel desperately sorry for the patients who don't always get the service that they need. I feel particularly sorry for the doctors and nurses and other health staff who are the most dedicated people in our society, the most idealistic people in our society, and they are not listened to. They are not listened to the way the system currently works. We will give them better public hospitals. We will move into this area. We won't do it by running it from Canberra. We will do it by giving control of public hospitals back to local people, local doctors, local nurses, local people who've been in those hospitals, and more generously funding them. Now, as I said, you've seen what we've done with Medicare. You've seen what we've done with the PBS. You've seen what we've done with aged care. Let us do the same good job for public hospitals that the Australian people need and deserve.
At this election, you've seen that you're going to have a clear choice when it comes down to healthcare. On the one hand, you've got an 11-year-old government who Minister Abbott asks you to judge on its record. And not surprisingly, he's only given you part of that record. Judge it also on these other parts of their record. We have 65% of the country in areas of workforce shortage. We have one in three Australians avoiding healthcare because they can't afford it. We have 650,000 people on public dental waiting lists around the country, and we have around 2,500 elderly Australians every night stuck in public hospitals because this government refuses to find aged care beds for them. They've had 11 years in power and they have no overarching plan for the future. They only have a plan to force nurses onto AWAs and a willingness to talk about their past record, which, as I think I've shown, is not necessarily something to boast about. Federal Labor, on the other hand, offers a clear vision for the future. We have a comprehensive national plan for our health and hospital systems across the country. We recognise the urgent need to tackle chronic and long-term conditions that afflict over half of the population. We know that working families feel increasingly under pressure as a result of this government's policies, and they feel let down and worried about whether they can get the health care they need when they need it. Mums and dad worry about this every day and every night if their children get sick. Under Federal Labor, the buck will stop with us. We will invest in a long-term plan for health, not just an election plan, which is what you're seeing from Mr Abbott. Federal Labor will put health front and centre. We will invest in better hospitals and we'll make sure that working families get the health care they need when they need it. Thank you.